This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your hour of mystery and crime that you can find every Wednesday at relicradio.com. Our first story this week comes from the adventures of Sam Spade. We'll hear the Dry Martini Caper from August 1st, 1948. After that, it's the tales of the Texas Rangers and Open and Shut. That story aired November 11th, 1951.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective. Brought to you by Wildroot Cream Oil Hair Tonic, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wildroot Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, how did it go?
It was the end, Effie, but the end.
Oh, Sam, not another one of those society things.
Depends on what you mean by society.
Well, you know, Sam, cafe society. Cocktails for two, hands across the table, making another old-fashioned, please.
Let's not lose our head, Effie. Nothing but double martinis, very dry, with two olives, sweetheart.
Two olives?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Sam, isn't that overdoing it?
It was all overdone, sweetheart. That's what cracked it. Now, stay right where you are. I'll be right down to mix up my report on the dry martini caper. Get it?
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, the hard-boiled private eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for the hair. August is always a great vacation month, and for those of you planning to take your vacation soon, let me suggest that when you're packing, be sure you include a bottle and a handy tube of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. For no matter where you go, you can always depend on Wild Root Cream Oil to groom your hair neatly and naturally, relieve dryness, and remove loose dandruff. Yes, you can take it with you on your vacation, and you should. Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. And now, with Howard Duff starring as Spade, Wildroot brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Wise as an owl, sober as a judge, Eff.
Oh. Well, the way you talked on the phone, I thought you'd drowned the shamrock, kissed the Black Betty, sliced the main brace, decorated the mahogany, made a Dutch bargain, or, in a word, gone to give a Chinaman a music lesson.
Effie, I wish you'd spend more time with Harper's Bazaar while I'm gone and less with the thesaurus of slang.
Ah.
Didn't know I could say that. Are you sober?
Well, I've been riding the choo-choo, drinking Adam's ale. And if you don't believe it, just ask me to walk a chalk.
Okay, heelsy-toesy, arms akimbo, eyes glazed.
Yes, sir.
Now then, tip of the forefinger to the tip of the nose.
Oh, Sam, it makes me dizzy.
Dizzy Gillespie?
Dizzy Gillespie. Oh, Sam.
Exactly. And you are not sewn up, shagged, shellacked, chickered, stuccoed, tap-shackled, stiffo, or real crazy.
Well, you know best, Sam.
Good, now try this one.
Yes, Prez.
Sitting posture, limbs cruciform. Cheesecake style.
Oh,
that's it. Now place the notebook. Just a little higher. Good. Yeah. Now apply the tip of the pencil to the top of the fool's cap and proceed viz.
Viz.
Date. August 1st, 1948. To Mrs. Netta Martini, 1000 Marina Boulevard, San Francisco. From Samuel Spade, license number 127596. Subject, Dear Netta. The first I knew of the caper was day before yesterday morning when I saw your husband's picture in the paper. It was one of those lovingly retouched executive-type photographs of a man in his late 40s or early 50s, graying at the temples and wearing an embalmed man of distinction look. The story was headlined, Corporation Head Waylaid by Mysterious Assailant. Chauffeur foils would-be kidnappers at offices of Martini Trading Company. The item under it wasn't as thrilling as the headline. Sounded as if he'd been knocked down for his wallet and the attempted kidnapping had been dreamed up by a bored city news reporter. I tossed it into the wastebasket along with my morning mail and went back to the Police Gazette. On page 3, the phone rang. Unique Garage, Harry speaking.
Mr. Spade?
One moment. Who's calling?
Gordon Martini.
Not Gordon Martini, the corporation head waylaid by mysterious assailant.
Chairman of the board, and there's nothing mysterious about it.
Then what are you doing on this phone?
I can't talk on the phone.
Where are you? In a hospital?
I left that pest house this morning. I'm at my residence, 1000 Marina Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
It will take you exactly 20 minutes by cab. You will meet me in front of the building and we'll have our conference in my car en route to the office.
Where's your office?
Downtown Post Street.
Well, why don't I meet you there?
I'm a busy man. I have a full calendar. I'm already late due to all that hospital red tape. But I can fit you into my schedule if you'll hurry. Now, look alive, man.
Well, it's a little early in the morning, but I'm trying hard.
Good. What will you want for a retainer?
I'll let you know if I decide to take the job.
Fair enough. 20 minutes. I'll expect you.
I should have looked more alive. It took me 2 minutes to get onto the street, 1 minute to flag down a cab, and 18 minutes to reach your address, Netta. A total of 21 minutes. As my taxi drew up to the curb in front of the canopied entrance to the corner apartment house at 1000 Marina, I saw your husband pacing indignantly up and down in front of the entrance, pausing only to glare at the outsized chronometer on his left wrist. His gray Homburg was perched atop an outsized turban of gauze bandage that decorated his head.
Ah, you're spayed. You're exactly 1 minute and 22 seconds late. Hours are made of minutes, minutes are made of seconds. In killing this seemingly negligible interval of time, you have wounded an hour.
Oh, I have. Well, I'm sorry. The traffic's pretty heavy out here this hour of the morning, you know.
You should have started a minute and 22 seconds earlier.
I'm sorry there was a bore on the telephone, kept talking about how valuable his time was.
Yeah, well, don't apologize. Only waste more time. Now, here's your check, $100. My car's just around the corner. I pay that chauffeur a large salary. We mustn't keep him waiting. In the meantime, you may as well start earning your fee.
I've been earning it for the past 22 minutes and 22 seconds.
Wait. I suspected as much. You drive a car?
Yeah, you mean one man drives all that?
I see him, that rascally chauffeur of mine. Sleep in the back seat. All right, come out of there, you. Hey, watch!
I was behind him and a little to the right. The shock of the rapid-fire 30-caliber slugs lifted him off his feet and knocked him against me. I went down under his 300 pounds of dead weight. By the time I rolled him off of me and got up, the gunman had jumped out of the limousine and into a gray sedan that was double-parked alongside. In the welter of traffic on the boulevard, I didn't dare risk throwing a shot after him, but I did get the first three numbers of the license plate before it buried itself in the heavy stream of AM commuters. That's when the air changed from exhaust fumes to something out of a Persian garden. I turned and looked for the first time into your Nile green eyes, Netta, and saw you twisting a handkerchief in your pale hands I might have loved beside the Shalimar, but on Marina Boulevard they looked like hysterics dead ahead.
Who did it? You saw him. Don't lie to me. Why don't they come with the ambulance? Why are all those people standing around there staring at me? Make them go
calm
away.
Down.
Make them go away. I can't stand it.
Now, stop it, will you? That's better. Now, come on over here. Who are you? His wife?
Yes. And it was all my fault. This is the end. I called Ernie out the window and asked him to come upstairs. I wanted him to return some lingerie. They sent the wrong color, peach.
Yeah. Who's Ernie?
He's our chauffeur. I was looking for the exchange slip when we heard the shots. Is he dead this time?
Yeah. Don't go to pieces.
Poor Gordon. He had so many enemies. He didn't drink well, you know. People dropped us like flies.
Well, they certainly dropped your husband.
Are you a policeman?
No, but I'll do until the real thing comes along, which is right now. If I were you, lady, I'd go back upstairs and relax. They'll get to you soon enough.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Poor Gordon, he looks so natural stretched out on the pavement.
Yeah.
I keep thinking he'll get up and stagger on into the elevator. He didn't drink at all well.
Go on, will you?
All right, I'm going. Oh, Ernie, where did you go?
Down to the garage. I heard a car driving. Poor Mr. Martini, it's all my fault.
No, Ernie, it's mine. If I only hadn't mislaid that exchange slip.
What?
You know, when I called you out the window to come and get that package.
Oh, that.
What do we got here? Who's the witness?
Me.
Oh, Spade. Lost another client, huh?
Not quite. I hadn't cashed the check yet.
Well, they got him anyway. All right, clear a space in there. Let him through with that stretcher.
All right.
Step over here out of the crowd, Sam. I want to get that statement.
Yeah. All right, out of the way, please. Okay, Gary, take it down.
Got a pencil?
Yeah, and I want it back.
Let's have it.
This guy is Gordon Martini.
Mm-hmm.
He headed up a local firm, the Martini Trading Company.
Yeah.
Last night he was working late at his office. Got boinged.
All right.
Phoned me this morning. Didn't know why. Thought maybe he wanted a bodyguard. Anyway, he needed one.
Mm-hmm.
Gunman was crouched in the back seat of the limousine, shoved the carbine out when Martini opened the door.
Carbine, huh?
Didn't get a good look at him. You can see why, the way it's closed in. No side windows.
Yeah. Foreign car, isn't it?
Stop drooling. You can't afford one. You getting all this?
What about the getaway?
Martini fell on top of me. I saw the getaway car on the back of his head.
Yeah.
The car was a gray sedan. The back of his head was a standard make, too. Only got the first three digits of the license plate, 5D9.
5D9. Anything else?
Yeah, give me back my pencil. The homicide boys want some help. They know my fee.
Mr. Spade.
Mrs. Martini. Why aren't you and Ernie upstairs getting your alibis shaped up?
Oh, please, I can't face the questions just yet. Would it be legal if I just avoided them till I can collect myself?
I don't know about legal, but it might be smart.
Where can we talk?
What do you suggest?
Well, there's a little cocktail lounge up on Lombard where Ernie and I all... it's just around the corner.
Very handy. Let's go.
Against my mother's advice, I should have listened, but, well, that's why I married Mr. Martini.
Well, that brings us up to 1943, and it's only 11:45.
You're just like him, always holding a stopwatch over my head.
Always?
Well, he drank, you know.
You told me that.
But it's much more important than you think. He often fell down and bumped his head.
You mean that mysterious assailant that waylaid him last night in his office was a double martini?
Two pitchers full before dinner.
Two?
Ernie had to carry him up to his office.
Well, what did he go up there for?
Oh, he had an appointment with the vice president of the firm, Mr. Nesbitt. Something had come up and he wanted Gordon to sign some papers. I don't know what. It wasn't the first time. I waited outside in the car. After Ernie had taken him upstairs, he came back to the car and we talked.
Uh-huh. Ernie has alibis upstairs, downstairs, and all around the house.
Well, then when the others came out and Gordon didn't, Ernie went upstairs to see why.
Others? Mr. Nesbitt and who else?
Mary Callahan.
Secretary?
No, she's an attorney. And if you think everything was legal between those two, well, but after all, who am I to call the kettle black?
Now, what are you trying to tell me? That you got him drunk so they could make him sign some papers? That he got himself drunk so he couldn't write his name? Or that he just got drunk and fell down?
Between you and me, I think she pushed him down a flight of stairs. In his condition, he'd never remember.
Why are you putting a finger on the Callahan dame?
Well, what would you think? She was the last one out of the building.
Why didn't you want to tell all this to the police?
Well, I didn't want to talk about his drinking. Things were bad enough already. That would have been the end.
Well, that's as good an answer as any. What do you want me to do for you?
Prove that she did it and Ernie didn't.
I'll let you take care of Ernie.
Oh, no. I don't want to alibi him unless I have to. He might get the wrong idea.
You mean I've got the wrong idea?
He might think it meant I still care for him, and I don't. I can't stand him anymore. The way he chews those toothpicks. And besides, if his alibi is too good, I might have trouble about that car being in the back seat of my car.
Pardon me, it sounded as if you said you might have trouble about a car being in the back seat of your car.
That's what I said.
Where is your car?
In the garage. But somebody had it out this morning. They scraped the fender coming back in and they ran into the wall. They must have been in an awful hurry.
Tell me, this car of yours, it wouldn't be a gray sedan?
Yes.
License number?
Oh, wait a minute. It's on my key ring. Here, 5D90...
That's enough. Why didn't you tell me this before?
Well, I couldn't get up the nerve. After I heard you tell that policeman the gun that killed Gordon was a carbine, and the gray sedan and all that, well, it's the end.
I hoped you were right, but I didn't think so. When I went to look at the gray sedan in your garage, I knew you were wrong, dead wrong. It was the getaway car, all right, and the carbine, as you know, was proven later to be the one that killed your husband. But Ernie had turned into a very poor suspect indeed. He was hugging the carpet between the front and rear seats, and when I nudged him, he didn't move. He'd been shot at closer range than Gordon Martini, and the killer had used only one slug. It was planted in the base of his brain, which made him not only a very poor suspect, but a very dead one.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade. If you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? Better than 4 out of 5 who replied said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And no wonder. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms the hair neatly and naturally, relieves annoying dryness, and removes loose dandruff. What's more, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil is the only leading hair tonic that contains soothing lanolin. So ask for Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. By the way, smart girls use Wild Root Cream Oil too, and mothers say it's grand for training children's hair. And now, back to the Dry Martini Caper. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
Sorry, Mr. Nesbitt is in conference. I'll see that he gets your message. Well, what can I do for you?
I would like to see Miss Callahan.
Miss Callahan is in conference with Mr. Nesbitt.
Good. I would like to see them both.
But I have orders not to disturb them.
You do not have to. I will.
Just a minute. You can't go breaking in like that.
Yes, and I'll tell you something else. He won't ever get away with it. Why, everyone in this town knows about your underworld connection.
Why, you doddering old fool, when I get through with you, if you don't go to the gas chamber for Gordon Martini's murder, you wish you had.
If I go to the gas chamber, it'll be for killing you, not Gordon.
Oh, you said it. Oh, why didn't I have witnesses here?
Miss Callahan?
Oh. Did you hear that?
You weren't talking loud enough. I didn't hear a thing.
Well, come on in here and I'll tell you a thing or two. Close that door. Now... sit down.
Thanks. I listen better on my feet.
Oh, so you're the Detective Netta Martini employed, eh? What's she paying you?
That'll depend on how much I have to do for her.
Well, I'll tell you how much you'll have to do for her. You'll have to make a case against me, and that's not going to be easy.
Why do you think she's out to get you?
Why, indeed. For years, this moth-eaten mouthpiece, this parboiled Porsche, has been victimizing poor Gordon, taking advantage of his weakness for drink.
Oh,
now that she's liquidated him, she appears with 55% of the common stock. Motive enough, eh?
Why, well, you fraudulent old fool. I simply bought up his debts and threw an attachment on those stocks. Unethical, but perfectly legal.
Look,
well, you're not even a proper thief. You're nothing but a bumbling old embezzler.
Now, listen
you
here.
You had the devil because he was going to call in the auditors and look over those books of yours. The Dean of Double Entry, Mr. Spade.
Look, will you say this for the courtroom scene? Now, you've convinced me. You're both crooked. I'll see that you both go up for something. That's a promise.
Oh, Mr. Spade, I gave you credit for better sense. Do you know that this Medusa of the magistrate's court, this poppy of the Hall of Justice...
well,
tricked him into changing the beneficiary of his insurance the very night she pushed him down the stairs.
And you were all in favor of it when you thought you held a controlling interest in the company. Answer that. You see, Mr. Spade, he can't answer that.
Good. I'm glad one of you is temporarily lost for words. Now, I only want to know one thing, and I want a straight answer. And if either one of you starts off on another speech, I'm going to push you into the nearest cloakroom and lock you in together.
Why, you wouldn't dare.
Try me, sweetheart.
Well, what do you want to know about this Amazon ambulance chaser, this Trilby of the traffic court.
Watch it.
Well, what do you want to know?
About Martini's insurance policy. Now, you say he changed the beneficiary. Please answer in 10 words or less. Who was the beneficiary and who is the beneficiary now?
I'll have to answer that question in 2 parts. The beneficiary was his wife. He changed it to the Martini Trading Company, a corporation of the state of California.
Thank you, and goodbye, Mary Callahan. And that Netta took the heat off of you for the time being, which made things tough for me, because Callahan and Nesbitt were so horrible, I never wanted to see them again, even to testify against them in court. I was sure of one thing. None of you would pull the trigger of that carbine. There'd been a hired killer behind it, and the way he operated, taking crazy chances in broad daylight in a crowded street, told me an important thing about it. That night, I made the rounds of the joints. At a plant called the Bing Room, I found a bouncer who'd tossed out a customer that run up a bill and tried to pay it with a $1,000 check. He sent me to the Atlas Hotel. The Atlas Hotel is off of 3rd Street down near the railroad yards. Not even a flea bag. The fleas sickened and died a long time ago. They couldn't take it. And from the look of the guests sprawled out in the mission furniture of the lobby, they wouldn't be able to much longer. A half-dead room clerk came back to the land of the living long enough to mutter a room number and wave me feebly toward a flight of crummy stairs.
Yeah, what do you want?
You, Hack Hartman?
Hey, you got anything for me, huh?
Yeah, I got news for you. Get back in the room. I'll tell you all about it.
Yeah, well, come on in.
Drop the shiv.
Yeah, I'll drop it. I'll fix you. I'll cut you good. I'll cut you.
I'm glad you did that. You make it easy for me. Now get over there.
Leave me alone. I'm not feeling so good.
You can feel a lot worse. Who hired you to put the burn on Martini?
You don't get nothing out of me.
Who gave you that check?
Oh, leave me alone.
I got all night, Hack, and I feel better than you do. Now, what did you do with that check? I'll shake it if your teeth come out with it. Come on.
All right. Stop it. I don't feel so good.
Okay. Where?
Pocket. My shirt.
Don't reach. I'll get it. It was a company check, which is what I'd expected. It was for $1,000 drawn in the Golden Gate Trust and Loan. But I wasn't expecting to find the signature on the bottom line. It was signed in a bold, firm hand, Gordon Martini. Who was the penman on this?
He wrote it himself, right in front of me.
What was it supposed to be for?
He wanted I should knock off his brother.
You get mixed up?
He's dead, ain't he?
That's what I mean. Gordon Martini's dead.
Ah, the papers got it wrong. That was his brother, his twin brother. And that other guy, that chauffeur, kept hanging around the garage so I couldn't get out. I had to burn him, too.
You know what you're saying?
Yeah. I'm making sense. Now get out of here. I'm getting steamed.
Don't let it worry you. I got a nice, cool place all picked out for you. After I turned Hack over to the cops, I did what checking I could on my own at that time of night. As nearly as I could learn, Gordon Martini could never have had a brother, twin or otherwise. He was a first child, his mother died in childbirth, and his father died 1 month later. So I went back to the offices of the Martini Trading Company, glass-keyed my way in, and made a quick frisk of it. There I learned that the signature on the check was indeed Gordon's, but that he had closed out his account at that bank the day he wrote it. I thought about that on the way out to your apartment.
I've been calling and calling, trying to reach you. I've been so worried. It's the end.
This time, you might be right. Fix me a drink.
Well, there's nothing in the house but those prepared martinis Gordon used to drink. Is that all right?
No, but fix me one anyway. Never mind the ice. It's not morning yet, but I hate myself already.
Why don't you just relax and let me get it for you?
I'll relax. You get the martinis.
What happened? What do you think of Mary Callahan? Isn't she the end?
She's cute. You're all cute.
All of me? I put ice in anyway. It's nasty with ice.
Nasty anyway.
I hope it doesn't make you fall down the way it did poor Gordon.
Thanks.
What's the matter? Too dry?
You open this bottle fresh?
Why, yes. What's the matter?
Where are they? The rest of the bottles. Oh, yeah. More of the same. Is this all your husband ever drank?
Yes, gallons of it. It's a special brand. He even took it with him to bars and people's houses. He'd sit and drink them right out of the bottle like a little child. Then he'd be falling down drunk, of course. And that's how we lost so many friends. They dropped us like
flies. Yeah, it was the end.
Who are you phoning?
City morgue.
Maxie, Sam Spade.
Sammy, what can I do on you?
On Martini, Maxie. They got around to the autopsy yet?
Yeah, they rushed him through.
Got the report handy?
Right in front of me. Funny thing, Sam. The doc said they should have saved themselves the trouble. He'd have been dead in a week or two without no help.
What from?
Brain tumor. Malignant, it says here.
Any alcohol in him?
None from drinking, Sammy.
What about the head wounds?
Accidental fall due to periodic fainting spells. Part of his condition.
Thanks, Maxie.
Well, what is it, Sam? Were the martinis poisoned?
No, sweetheart. The martinis were colored water.
Why, they couldn't. Well, what made him get so drunk?
He didn't. He was sick.
But, Sam, who killed him?
Killed himself.
But he couldn't have.
He hired a gunman to do it. He planned his own murder.
But that... What? Well, why didn't he leave a note or something? He could have ruined us all.
Come here, sweetheart. Put your little head on Uncle Sam's shoulder.
What, Sam?
That's just what he wanted you to do. He wanted to ruin you. He let Mary Callahan fleece him out of his interest in the company. He let Nesbitt juggle the books. He let you go your way with Ernie. He let all three of you fix yourselves up with as nice a set of motives for murder as a jury could ask for.
Oh, he couldn't have.
The real joker... was the check he used to pay off the man he hired to kill him. It bounced. It also proved he'd planned his own murder. But he still has his revenge. Because the insurance that would have kept the corporation from going broke won't be paid off on account of a self-liquidating cause.
Oh, Sam, darling, what's going to become of us all?
Well, Callahan and Nesbitt will probably sue each other to death. You might have to go to work and earn a living.
Well, I have $500. I might invest it in something.
You already have. Here's my bill.
But Sam, you didn't help me. What? This is the end.
No, it isn't, sweetheart. This is the beginning. Come here.
Sam.
Period. End of the end.
Well, you ask me. You helped it.
Now, F.
Well, that just goes to show you.
Show what, F?
Man's ingratitude to man.
Hmm?
But what did Mr. Martini have against you?
Why, nothing, sweetheart. He just needed a smart operator like, well, no, Johnny Madero was under.
Sam.
Hmm?
Have you cashed that check Mr. Martini gave you?
Well, not yet.
Oh,
Sam,
any bartender would know better than to take a check from a man who drinks that much.
F, you haven't been paying attention. He didn't drink. He didn't. I was able to establish that later on.
Well,
you haven't been listening.
Well, at the time, Sam, for all anybody knew, he was a hopeless drunk. He was, Sam. Oh, you're so wonderful and trusting. But I do wish that you'd understand this. He was a hopeless drunk.
For the last time, Effie, he didn't really drink.
I'll just type this up, Sam, while you call the bank.
I'll do that.
A final reminder, friends. Whether you're going on a long vacation trip or just a weekend to the beach, be sure you've got a bottle and tube of Wild Root Cream Oil tucked away in your suitcase. Do this, and you'll find it's easy and quick to spruce up again after stepping out of the water or off the tennis court. For no matter where or when you use it, Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves dryness, removes loose dandruff. So at home and away from home, help yourself to handsome hair with Wild Root Cream Oil. And next time you have a chance, ask your barber for a professional application of Wild Root Cream Oil Hair Tonic. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Well, here it is, Sam. I hope it was worth the price of the paper and carbon.
You made carbon copies of that? An unimportant report like that?
It bounced?
Well, the estate isn't settled yet.
Oh, Sam, you're so wonderful and trusting.
Effie, I am not wonderful and trusting. I am a hard-boiled private eye.
I know. Just a pity there's no money in it.
And I'm also two-fisted.
Sam.
Hmm?
Have you ever thought of ceramics?
Of what?
Ceramics. It takes virtually no capital. All you need is a small furnace and some clay. And if you don't have any talent, you can just make ashtrays.
Thanks, I already have one.
Oh, flower pots are fun. You can pot them on a wheel.
And you can pot your hat on and wheel on out of here and also take your furnace and clay.
Oh, I love you when you're so gay and careful.
I am not gay and carefree.
You are a hard-boiled private eye.
Good night, and sue me for your back salary, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, are produced and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Loreen Tuttle is Effie. The Adventures of Sam Spade are written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. Gil Dowd directed tonight's broadcast in William Spear's absence. Join us again next Sunday for another adventure with Sam Spade, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. This is Dick Joy reminding you to
get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. It keeps your hair in trim. You see, it's non-alcoholic, Charlie. It's made with soothing lanolin. You better get Wild Root Cream Oil, Charlie. Start using it today. You'll find that you will have a tough time, Charlie, keeping all the gals away.
Hiya, Baldy.
Get Wild Root right away.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. From Hollywood, another authentic reenactment of a case transcribed from the files of the Texas Rangers. Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Texas, more than 260,000 square miles, and 50 men who make up the most famous and oldest law enforcement body in North America. We'll be right back. from the files of the Texas Rangers come these stories based on fact. Only names, dates, and places are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. Case for tonight, Open and Shut.
It is 1:37 a.m., September 9, 1945. John Meston, a wealthy rancher, is awakened by the sound of a speeding car screeching to a stop on the driveway outside his house. Seconds later, he jumps out of bed and reaches for a robe as the downstairs door opens. His daughter, Connie, comes up the stairs screaming hysterically.
Daddy, help me! Daddy, please!
Connie, baby! What is it? What's the matter?
Oh, Daddy, Bob! He's dead!
Bob, dead? What happened to him? Connie, get hold of yourself! What happened?
I'm frightened, Daddy. I'm frightened. There was a man with a bandana over his face.
Where, Connie? Where?
The old cattle road east of the ranch. We were parked there. And, oh, it was horrible.
Oh, here, sit down. Sit down while I call the sheriff. And you'd better have a doctor. Get something for your nerves.
He tried to hold us up.
Why not?
Bob had his gun in the car. They fought over it.
Operator,
get me Sheriff Sykes. I want to report a murder.
Connie Meston was in no condition to be questioned, and Sheriff Sykes had only an incoherent story to follow. He called the Texas Rangers. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned to the case. He arrived at the Meston ranch shortly before dawn.
Might as well wait here in the library, Ranger. The doctor's still in with the girl. He's had a mighty bad shock.
Did she tell you where it happened, Sheriff?
Yeah, the old cattle road east of the ranch. I got some men riding out there now. They'll call us as soon as they find the body.
If that girl isn't going to be able to talk real soon, we better get out with your men.
Oh, here's the girl's father.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Sheriff.
How are you, Mr. Meston?
Glad you got here, Ranger.
Can we talk to your daughter now, Mr. Meston?
I'm afraid not. Doctor's put her to sleep. Says she must have absolute rest for a few hours.
There's no point in our waiting then, Sheriff. We can come back later.
I'm sorry, but that'd be best. I'll walk out with you.
What's the best way to get to that cattle road?
Drive into town, then around the highway. Be shorter to cut across the ranch on horses. You got yours and your trailer. Maybe Mr. Meston will lend me one.
Take your pick of the stable, Sheriff.
Couldn't we drive across the range?
No, you've got a ravine to cross and a stream to ford.
What time did your daughter get home, Mr. Meston?
Just a minute before I called the sheriff. A little after 1:30. I'd only been in bed about an hour. Locked up about 12:30 and turned in.
Is this the car she came home in?
Yeah, Bob Brady's car. I heard her drive up, then I heard her crying. Came in and tore up the stairs to my bedroom. I'm afraid it's going to take a long time to get over this.
Don't let anybody touch this car until I can get a fingerprint man to go over it. Killer may have left his mark someplace.
I'll see it ain't touched.
Well, I'll go get me a horse in the stable, Ranger.
How well did your daughter know Brady?
Well, they went around together for a spell, but this date last night was the first they'd had in a long time. Brady worked for me.
Doing what?
Accountant. Handled all the ranch business. Got an office in one wing of the house.
I see. I'll radio for a fingerprint man to come down from our lab while the sheriff's getting his horse.
Want me to ride with you for any reason?
No. Better do whatever you can to bring your daughter around so we can talk to her. We'll be back later. Made my radio call, and then Sheriff Sykes and I cut across the ranch to the old road. The riders had just found Bob Brady's body. Nothing had been touched. The riders waited while the sheriff and I went over the ground. Standing right beside the car when he was killed. The car tracks are heaviest here where it was parked.
Yeah.
Brady and the girl's been walking around, though. If prints go over that way and then turn around and come back here to the body. There's a third set of prints mixed in with theirs.
Yeah, it must be the killers.
Yeah. Came up the road here and stopped beside the car and walked on again. Heavy powder burns on Brady's coat. He shot from close up.
I only saw the girl for a minute. Couldn't make much out of what she was saying, but I think Brady was killed with his own gun.
How come?
Carried an automatic in the glove compartment of his car. He toted quite a bit of the ranch's cash on him sometime.
It's funny the killer didn't use his own gun, unless he didn't have one.
Well, the girl said Brady tried to get his gun from the car. The fellow took the gun away from Brady and killed him. So I guess he couldn't have had a gun of his own.
It doesn't make sense. He was taking a mighty big chance, staging a holdup if he wasn't armed. Although I guess it was robbery, all right. Brady doesn't seem to have a cent on him. No wallet, no wristwatch, nothing.
Yeah, no doubt about the motive. Well, I guess I better have the body moved into town. Deputy can notify Brady's mother.
Yeah. I'd better order an autopsy report. Isn't going to tell us anything we don't know, though. Keep a couple of your riders here.
Sure thing, but what do you want them to do?
Beat the brush and look for Brady's gun. And while they're looking, we can follow this extra set of tracks and see where they lead. I expected to follow the marks of a man who didn't want to be followed. The usual erratic trail a killer leaves when he's trying to throw off pursuit. But this trail led straight as an arrow.
And whoever he is, he sure didn't cover his tracks very well.
No, unless he's headed for some spot where he knows his trail will be lost. Aye. Wait a minute. Whoa, boy.
Whoa.
Charco.
What is it?
Trouble may start here.
Yeah. Turned off the road into the fields. The
ground's worn that way, though. It's a path that's been used before. Come on.
Come on.
Yeah. The grass has been trampled from regular use. Anybody live out here you know of?
Nope. Yeah, an old shack about a mile and a half across. Used to be a line house. Owner rents it to a Mexican.
We better have a talk with him. We can move a little faster, but keep your eye out for those tracks as we go.
Get up, Charlie.
We reached the shack and the earth around it were the boot prints of a man. They matched the ones we'd been following.
Yeah. He's in there, all right, Ranger.
Yeah. He may still have that gun with him.
He was up late. Could still be asleep.
Come on. We'll see.
He is still in bed.
Shh. Quiet. Take a look at these boots. Right beside his bunk. Bent nail in the heel of one of them.
Yep. Made the march we've been following, all right. He's our boy.
All right, you. Wake up.
Who's that?
Come on, get up.
Please. What have I done? Why'd you come here?
What's your name?
Jose Morales, senor.
Where were you last night?
I walked into town.
Anybody see you there?
Si, senor. The man in the package store. I stopped there to buy a bottle of wine. There's the bottle on the table.
What time did you leave town, Morales?
It was almost midnight, I think.
And you walked home, too?
Si, senor, si. Why do you ask me all these questions? I don't know.
How long does it take you to walk back here?
Hour, maybe more. I don't have a watch, senor.
Are you sure you don't have a watch now?
Si, I never own one,
senor. How about a gun?
I don't have a gun.
How did you come when you came home?
Well, I don't remember, senor. I just walked.
Well, you better remember. You came up the cattle road. We followed your boot tracks. Were you alone all the time?
Si, alone.
You didn't see a car parked on the cattle road?
Si, senor, si. There is man and girl there. They will remember that they see me there.
What's that? Hold it, Sheriff. Go ahead, Morales. When did they see you?
On the way home, I passed by the car. I think maybe the car is broke down. So I took a look inside, but there's nobody there.
Uh-huh.
And then I walk a little further. I meet a man and girl. I asked them, is something wrong with the car?
Go ahead.
Well, they told me no, so I just come away. Senor, if you can find them, they will remember. They can tell you I was there.
This man's walking himself right into the electric chair, Jase.
Yeah, too easy. You better get dressed, Morales. You're coming with us.
But why, senor? What have I done?
You'll find out later. Just get dressed. Let's comb this shack, Sheriff. See if we can find that gun. We didn't find the gun or anything else that might have been taken from Brady. And the sheriff's riders drew a blank, too. But we had enough to hold Morales at the jail. We locked him up and went back to the Meston ranch.
Before you speak to my daughter, gentlemen, I want to ask you to kind of take it easy. In here. Connie, it's Sheriff Sykes and the ranger.
Howdy.
Miss Connie.
Hello.
Miss Meston, would you mind telling us just what happened last night?
Well, Bob called me, Bob Brady. He wanted to see me. We hadn't seen each other for some time.
I thought he worked here at the ranch.
Well, it did. I meant we hadn't been out together for a long time.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, he picked me up here. And we drove. Then we parked up the old cattle road.
Lots of young folks parked there on an off-ranger. It's sort of a lover's lane.
We'd been there quite a while talking. See, Bob was going to be married next month to a girl named Mildred Peterson.
She's a school teacher, ain't she?
I see. Go ahead, Miss Meston.
Well, he asked me if I wouldn't change my mind and make up with him before he got married and it was too late.
Mm-hmm.
I told him we weren't right for each other. He'd be happier with somebody else. And then, well, all of a sudden a man came up to the cart. It was dark and he had a bandana over his face.
Go on.
He held us up. He made us get out of the car.
You have a gun?
I'm not sure. I was frightened. He had something in his hand. He took Bob's wallet and his watch, and then he told us to stay right where we were.
Didn't he take anything from you?
Well, yes. Yes, he took my purse.
And then what happened?
Well, all of a sudden, Bob made a dash for the car. He got his gun from the glove compartment, but the man was right after him. They fought. The man got the gun away from Bob, and he shot Bob and ran away.
Hey, gentlemen, if you don't mind...
Just
I
another
think
second,
that...
Mr. Meston. Miss Meston, what were you wearing?
Well, just a plain blue taffeta dress. It's right there on the chair.
After that, you took Brady's car and drove back here, and your father called the sheriff. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Driving back from there, you had to come through town. Why didn't you stop and get to a phone?
I was frightened. I couldn't think. I wanted to get home.
You should be able to understand that, Ranger. After all, the girl kept...
Sure, Mr. Meston. Just checking. You said you were in bed and heard your daughter drive up. Is that right?
Yes, like I told you before. I locked up and turned in about 12:30. Connie come home about an hour later.
Came in and right up to your bedroom. Is that right?
Yes. Why?
Just getting the picture. All right, Sheriff. We can go now.
Right. Oh, we can find our own way out, Mr. Meston. Miss Connie can come into town and dictate her statement in a day or so.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Bye. Well, Ranger, this looks like a quick one to me. Case against the Mexican Morales is open and shut.
I don't know, Sheriff. Somebody's lying. Meston said he locked up and went to bed. His daughter came in and went tearing up to his bedroom.
Well, what's wrong with that?
How'd she get into the house if Morales took her purse? Her keys would be in her.
Well, she might have had her key in the pocket of her dress.
Might have, except for one thing. That dress has no pockets.
In just a moment, we will continue with Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jase Pearson.
This month, the National Broadcasting Company celebrates 25 years of bringing you the best radio programs. 7 days a week, you can depend upon NBC for music, drama, comedy, entertainment of every kind, as well as the latest up-to-the-minute news from every corner of the world. When you tune where you hear the familiar NBC chimes, you know you're tuned for the finest in radio listening.
We continue now with Tales of the Texas Rangers and tonight's case, Open and Shut, an authentic story from the files of the Texas Rangers.
I checked on Morales' story as best I could. He had been in town, and he had bought a bottle of wine to take home with him the night of the murder. But when I got back to the jail, the sheriff had evidence piling up against the Mexican.
Your fingerprint crew dropped off copies of prints they found on Brady's car. These prints were found only on the door of the car. Now, compare them with these.
Same man, all right.
Matching set of the prints I rolled off Morales when we brought him in. He must have done it.
Maybe, but I'm not convinced. I'll see you later.
Here, where are you going, Ranger?
To see Brady's mother and the girl he was going to marry.
The only boy had left. His two brothers were killed in the war.
Please, Mother Brady, we've got to help the Ranger.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ranger.
It's all right, ma'am. How long had it been since your son had been out with Connie Meston before last night?
6 months. I thought it was all over. I thought she'd leave him alone when she knew him and Mildred was going to be married.
Did he brood about her much during the time he wasn't seeing her?
No. He knew it was best. She was spoiled. She never really wanted him. Except when she found out she couldn't have him.
Miss Peterson, you and Brady ever quarrel about Connie Meston?
Oh, no. He was over it. He knew what she was.
She's a cruel, heartless little cheat. She made his life miserable.
Have you got any idea why he called her and asked her to see him that night?
Well, Ranger, he didn't call her. She called him.
You're sure of that?
I heard him answer the phone. He didn't want to go, but she must have been insisting, because after a while he said all right, he'd meet her just once. For the last time.
Thanks.
Ranger, is it true what we heard? You've got the killer in jail?
I wouldn't count on that. Yet. I went back to the jail and questioned Morales again. He was frightened, but his story never moved an inch from what he told us the first time. Then I saw the sheriff.
I spoke to District Attorney Jase. He thinks we got enough to take the grand jury for an indictment.
Give me one of the mug shots you took of Morales when you brought him in.
Sure. Here's a picture.
Thanks. I want Connie Meston to look at it and see if she can identify Morales.
Well, she said the man who stuck him up had a bandana over his face.
She said a lot of things, Sheriff. Brady struggled with the man who killed him. Morales carried a bottle of wine from town to his shack. We checked that. If he had a struggle with anyone, how come he didn't drop the bottle and break it?
It seems like it would have broke, don't it?
You got a bandana here?
Yeah, the one we took from Morales. Why?
No, not that one. I want one with a different color and pattern.
Maybe you want in my deputy's locker.
Get it. I want to see how many lies Connie Meston can tell. I won't be satisfied with the case against Morales until we find Brady's gun and the things that were supposed to be stolen. I went back to the Meston ranch the next morning. Connie Meston was taking Brady's death hard. As hard as a rock. She wasn't at the ranch house. She was near the corral, training a jumper to take a fence.
All right, come on, boy, now. Let's go. Come on. Oh, now, back again. Come on. Come on. Come on, I said. Well, I'll teach you to balk. When I want you to jump, you'll jump. Come on.
Take easy with that horse.
Oh. Ranger, I didn't see you coming.
Glad to see you've recovered from your shock.
Well, I had to find something to occupy my mind. Thought I'd work my horses. Got them ended in the show at El Paso next Sunday.
It'd be nice if the horse lives that long, the way you use that whip.
It happens to be my horse. Now, what do you want, anyway?
A little information. We may have the man who killed Brady.
Oh, yeah, I heard. The Mexican Morales?
News gets around. Here's a picture of him. Is he the man?
Well, he could be. He looks like the one.
What do you recognize? That scar on his chin?
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, no. His face was covered.
Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Is this the bandana you saw?
Well, it was dark, but it was just like that one.
Uh-huh. Well, thanks.
That all you want to know, Ranger?
Yeah, that's all. For now. I saw Connie Meston's father as I was leaving the ranch. He seemed pale and shaky seeing me there. I was certain that Connie Meston was lying all the way. The sheriff dropped a bombshell in my lap when I got back to the jail. He was running for his car when I drove up.
Hey, Sheriff! Sheriff, where are you going?
Oh, I'm glad you got here. I was just heading for Morales' place. You'll want to come along, I reckon.
Why? What's out there?
I think we're going to find the gun and the stuff he stole. Look, here. Just got this in the mail. It was posted last night in the Mexican section.
The note was printed in Spanish on yellow paper. It said, "Look in cattle tank near Morales' house." That was all.
Reckon Morales trusted a friend who decided to double-cross him?
We better get out there.
Well, there's no doubt about this case now, Ranger. We find that gun and Morales is headed for the electric chair for sure. Here's something else.
What'd you find?
The watch. Right in his wristwatch.
Good.
Well, this is all of it. Come on, let's get out of this water.
Sure.
Nice haul. The gun, the girl's purse, Brady's wallet, and wristwatch, right on Morales' doorstep. That's the end of this case.
No, it isn't.
Oh, now, Jase.
Look at these things, Sheriff. Look at the muzzle of this gun. It's clogged solid with dirt, packed tight.
Well, always some mud in the bottom of a cattle tank.
Yeah, but this isn't mud. It's packed earth, and it's packed so tight it didn't dissolve in the water.
Yeah. Say, that is funny.
Sheriff, this gun was buried someplace after it was fired. Buried and then dug up again and thrown into this cattle tank.
Say, you're right. Traces of dirt packed into the holes of the watch band, too. And in the wallet.
Sure. But look at this purse. The purse wasn't buried. Or the same dirt would be jammed in the metal frame. Connie Meston's keys. She had them when she ran home after Brady was shot. She brought the purse with her to plant with the stuff she dug up after she knew Morales was under suspicion.
You mean she killed Brady, buried the evidence before she went home to make it look like robbery?
Yeah, because the real motive was jealousy. You hold Morales another 24 hours. That'll be long enough to get what we need. Then Connie Meston can take his place.
But you got no proof on her.
I'll send that anonymous note through to the handwriting division at our lab. They can get a sample of Connie Meston's writing from horse show registration blanks at El Paso for comparison.
Yes, but will that help, Ranger? After all, the note is printed, and it's in Spanish.
There'll still be similarity in letter formation. Besides, registration blanks usually ask for printed information on breeding and identification. If Connie Meston wrote that note, lab will know it. It checked. Connie Meston's printing on registration blanks for the horse show matched the printing on the anonymous note. It was almost enough, but I wanted one more thing. A trace of dirt on something she owned. A trace that would match the earth that had been packed in the muzzle of Brady's gun when it was buried. I drove out to the Meston ranch and found Connie in the stables. Mind if I come in?
Oh, you here again? What do you want this time?
I thought you might like to know we found Brady's gun. Anonymous note told us where it was. Cattle tank out at Morales' place.
You got a good case, then.
No. Morales didn't put the gun in the tank.
How do you know?
Because the gun and the other things had been buried. They were dug up again and thrown in the tank.
Well, maybe he decided to change the hiding place.
While we were holding him in jail? No, it's not likely. Morales didn't kill Brady.
Well, you know who did?
Not for sure, but we'll find out. Whoever dug those things up must have carried them in something while they were taking them to the cattle tank. Some dirt was jammed in the muzzle of the gun. We find out what it was carried in, clothing maybe, somebody's pocket. We can match the dirt in our lab.
I see. That's very interesting.
I thought you'd think so. Well, I guess I better be getting back to town. I drove away from the ranch and parked behind some trees that gave me a view of the stable. A minute after I left her, Connie Meston came out, riding like the wind. I unloaded charcoal from the trailer and followed her, always keeping cover between us. She didn't seem to be carrying anything to dispose of, but all of a sudden she came to a stop by a stream. She took the saddlebags and started to shake them out over the water.
Oh, boy.
All right, charcoal, let's go.
Get up, boy. Yeah! Stay right where you are, Miss Meston.
What are you doing here, Ranger? What's the matter with you?
I'll take those saddlebags.
Sure. Any log and empty them into a stream?
None that I know of.
Well, take them then, Ranger, because they're empty.
Not as empty as you wish they were. And a few grains of dirt stuck in the seam. That's all we're going to need.
Well, you can't make anything out of that.
Oh, I got a few other things. That anonymous note in Spanish matched the registration blanks you sent into El Paso. I don't think you'll be showing your horses Sunday.
Why, you...
Give me that whip. You... you won't be using this again either. Now, get on your horse and ride for the house. I'm taking her in, Mr. Meston. I got an idea you started to suspect she was lying the same time I did.
She's not lying, Ranger. She didn't know nothing about it. I did it. I shot Brady.
I'm sorry, but that won't work either. I got her pinned down all the way.
Daddy, help me talk to him. Well, give him some money. Well, what kind of a father are you if you can't help me?
Shut up!
Why, you hit me.
Yes. I should have started 20 years ago. Before I let you get to be what you are. Maybe I'm not legally guilty, Ranger. But I'm guilty of raising another way I did.
Too bad you didn't think of it sooner. All right, Connie. Let's get into town.
Connie Meston's trial was spotted with hysterics that failed to convince the court, although she maintained she was innocent in the face of overwhelming evidence against her. Then, as the trial neared a close, she changed her plea to guilty, and in an effort to avoid a death sentence, she confessed. She was sentenced to the women's prison at Huntsville for 50 years.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. Joel McRae is currently seen starring in the Universal International Technicolor production Cattle Drive. The cast included Tony Barrett, Joan Banks, Francis X. Bushman, Farley Bear, and Vivi Janis. Technical advisor was Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez of the Texas Rangers. This story was transcribed and adapted by Joel Murcott, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Hal Gibney speaking.
It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. Next, it's The Big Show, with stars including Sophie Tucker, June Valley, Jerry Lester, Ann Sheridan, Morton Downey, and your charming hostess, Tallulah Bankhead. Then enjoy mirth and music with Phil Harris and Alice Faye. Later, Theater Guild on the Air presents Age of Innocence, co-starring Claudette Colbert and MacDonald Carey. And for pictures of your favorite NBC stars, buy the current NBC Silver Jubilee issue of Radio TV Mirror Magazine. Next, it's The Big Show. All this and Tallulah, too, on NBC.
That's it for Case Closed this week. There's more from Sam Spade, Tales of the Texas Rangers, Case Closed, and all of the other podcasts at RelicRadio.com. While you're there, if you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, hit that donate button. Thank you again to all who have, and thanks for joining me this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.